Whitney.
I'm Danielle, and we are the founders of Saqqara Life, on a mission to nourish your body and transform your life.
Saqqara is a Sanskrit word that describes the action of turning your thoughts into things and manifesting your reality.
We believe that who we surround ourselves with, what we watch, what we listen to, what we eat, the information that we take in, impacts the way we think and therefore who we are.
The conversations that follow are with bold thinkers who have had an impact on how we view the world, ourselves, and what it means to live the Saqqara life. The intention of these conversations is to push each of us to greater heights so that we can turn our thoughts into things and all shine our light a little brighter.
We are so excited to be on this journey with you. Welcome to the Saqqara Life. Also, please note we are recording from our homes via Zoom, so please forgive us for any sound issues.
Today, we're talking to the inspirational poet, activist, and mama, Cleo Wade. Cleo has been called the poet of her generation by Time magazine, and her poems have been a personal source of inspiration for Danielle and me, as well as for her huge community of followers on Instagram. Cleo's messages champion self-confidence and self-love, core tenets of living the Saqqara life. She's a best-selling author and recently released her first children's book, What the Road Said, to bring some of those messages to the younger generation. We are so excited not only to have Cleo on the podcast today, but also to be partnering with her for our Empowered Motherhood Summit in support of Every Mother Counts, an organization that works to make pregnancy and childbirth safe for everyone, everywhere. Please welcome Cleo Wade. Hi. Well, so excited to have you on the Saqqara Life podcast today. We are big fans of your work, so I'm excited to get to chat with you.
Thanks for having me.
On our podcast, we like to ask everybody the same question to start out with, which is, what do you feel like your personal mission is here on Earth?
Gosh, it's interesting because I feel like that question is something that can be either really liberating for people or kind of feel like a trap, because sometimes that changes from one decade to another or from one day to another. And Absolutely. So I think instead of maybe answering it as an overall, because I do feel that instead of trying to pick one passion or one purpose, we can bring passion and purpose to the different things we do and set goals in those spaces and connect those goals and do really amazing things with our lives. And so I think for me, I would say right now in my workspace, I feel, and also in my personal life, you know, I always wake up every morning and wonder how to make the world a less lonely place. For even just a single person, I feel like when I'm writing my books, I just think of how to make even just one person feel less alone. And even in my personal life, whether that's one friend to just kind of remember to reach out to or be thoughtful of what they may be going through, or send flowers for no reason, or, you know, making sure my daughter feels seen and heard. I think that really being able to acknowledge other people and make them feel important is definitely something that drives my life.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I feel like you do a lot with community. You've brought people together through your poetry, through your work, through your messages, and people gather around these messages that you're sharing out in the world. And it does bring people together, especially I feel like through your Instagram platform and just giving people a common ground of, I don't want to say optimism, but optimism I feel like is definitely a piece of it, but also moments to pause and to think. And so how do you feel like community plays a role in what you do?
I think for me, community is everything. I think that it's what heals us. I think it's what frees us. I think that it is the end of every goal of anything we make. You know, if you sit down and decide to make a new product, you're making it for a group of people, you're making it for a community, you're creating something to connect others, or whether that's connecting them through a supplement or connecting them through an idea or a feeling or a shared experience. And that's because we need each other. Life is really, really difficult, and it's filled with loss and grief and beauty and joy and so much. And all of those things are made better when we are in community. You know, the hardest times in your life, there's a reason we have rituals like funerals, you know, that when you go through profound loss, being in community helps. If you are going through the happiest, most joyful, celebratory moment in your life, there's a reason you want to throw a party or have a wedding or, you know, have an anniversary party or go out to dinner to celebrate with your friends. And so, you know, I think that those are all examples of course, like being able to be in community physically, but part of that physical gathering is the kinship that we share. And so to me, I think that there's nothing. Even if you don't think community is important, it's important. Even if you don't think it's a big part of your life, it is actually what has shaped who every single one of us are.
Yeah, that's so true. And how do you think community is in today's day? You know, we're about a year into this pandemic of when we had a stay-at-home order, when people were separated, and a lot of people are still at home, but perhaps finding community online. What do you think about that?
I think that with community, I really look forward to us being able to be in person together again, because there's so much that we're all going through, and to have to go through everything we've all experienced, whether it's wherever it is on the spectrum during COVID, wherever you are, whether you're one of the most vulnerable people or, you know, one of the most privileged people, you know, this has been at the very least, an emotionally traumatizing experience for every single person. And that's at the very, very least. And it's been financially traumatizing for others. It's been socially or physically traumatizing for others, you know? And so I think that really look forward to us leaving isolation, because it's really hard to heal in isolation. And so I think that we are going to be on a profound healing journey on the other side of this, whenever that may be. And it is one that will require togetherness.
Yeah, I agree with you about finding community wherever we can get it. My grandfather passed away in December and the day after Christmas. And we, as a family, couldn't all get together. And so his funeral services, they were all streamed online over Facebook for friends and family to join and participate and be there. And it was actually really, really nice, where we felt like we were there and we got to see people, and the people who were able to be there in person and talk to each other and have this way to gather, even though we were all across the country and all spread apart. But I do think that coming together is really important for the healing process and for that moment of closure, or even processing. I think with life and death, we get so many thoughts around our own life and our own mortality. And what does it mean to be a mortal human and to be living in this process, which can be difficult thoughts to be having, I think.
Well, and it's important to remember that ritual is something that has carried us through as human beings since the beginning of our existence. And it's rarely, you know, there's few rituals that are done alone. And even the ones that are done alone are actually very important. You know, I always laugh when people are like, now that self-care is a part of our conversations. And I'm like, self-care has actually never left any part of how human beings have existed. It's just that we used to call it rituals. And so self-care is just a take on rituals, and rituals have always been about how people have stayed sane, how people have stayed married, how people have stayed in community, how people who have built an understanding with each other, a healing for each other, you know, whether it's you read about ancient, like the original peoples in Africa or Israel, Palestine, you know, you're really reading about whether it's gathering around spiritual texts or religious texts or whatever it may be. These are all rituals, and rituals, self-care is just a different word for rituals. It's the rituals that we participate in or embark on to do something. So it's really important to know that just because community has had to change and go virtual, we can still hold on to some rituals and in the importance of what these rituals offer us.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes me think about, you know, in this time, creating self-care rituals and even just creating space for ourselves, that is often where I find my sources of creativity. I need complete silence, like silence of the amount of inputs coming in. I get creative after the workday is over and the emails stop flowing in. Where do you find your creativity? How do you stay creative day after day?
I think that part of being able to be open to creativity or any type of focus is to really reduce disruption, right? But we live in an age of like constantly disrupting ourselves. You know, our phone is like literally constantly lighting up, disrupting our thinking, disrupting what we're doing by another message popping up with the phone or the thing. And so I think that to live a more creative life in general, because I think that, you know, even if you can set aside the like 2-hour block where you can have zero disruptions and just be able to focus on what you're doing, which is also really important, but overall in how you live your life, not prioritizing disruption. So something we really work on in our household is making sure that like the phone isn't like an extension of who we are, right? So it doesn't go everywhere we go. So if I'm in the living room and I'm going into the dining room, the phone doesn't have to travel with me. And you know, at what point do we decide that like from this time to this time is like the last hours my daughter are going to be awake for the day. So like, why do I need to be like multitasking or disrupting or having any type of disruptions in that last hour or 45 minutes of the day? So we have a lot of what we really work on is just to kind of, my partner Simon and I are both working creative fields and we're both writers. And so we just think of like, not only how to have creative time to let out what you've been building inside of you or thinking about, but how to create a life where you have access to process freely all the things you're building inside of you or thinking about. And, you know, one of those is just kind of knowing what belongs in what rooms when, and, you know, and knowing that this type of idea of like constant disruption, constant distraction isn't actually like a way of life.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love this idea of not just making time for creativity, but making it part of your lifestyle.
Yeah. But it's like anything, right? I mean, don't you find that, you know, if you only sat down, if you were like, well, I make 2 hours a day every day to eat a salad. So like, that's me being healthy is like, cause I do it at dinner time every day, but you're like, everyone knows that like, and listen, like that's why you create Sakara, right? It's everyone knows that like a diet doesn't work, but a lifestyle does. And everyone knows that if someone's like selling you a quick this, that, the other, and isn't trying to like tell you top to bottom, live this way, and living this way is life affirming for your body, or puts like the plants and the, you know, the medicine of the world into your body so that you can heal and move faster and like climb mountains with your body if you want to, like that's the way.
Exactly. But I think I've thought a lot about a healthy lifestyle and where those moments are to fit into your life, these moments of health and whatnot. But I haven't thought about like, how do you live a creative life, a life of that inspires creativity? And I think even this word creativity, people might think of it as, oh, doing art or writing or something. But to me, creativity is so much more. It is creating something that didn't exist before, like these ideas, these thoughts, these words, a recipe, a concept, a product, whatever it is.
And that's the very nature of human existence, right? Is that like we are creators. We take nothing and we turn it into something. And I always used to say this when I would talk to companies, it'd say, you know, everyone who thinks they work in the finance department or in HR and they don't have a creative role here, you do, because every time you're solving a problem, you're being creative. And anytime you make anything, whether it's a loaf of bread or a spreadsheet or a painting, you are being creative because you're creating something. And that's a really critical way to move through the world, because a lot of the times what happens is that people, so much more often than not, are like, oh, I'm not creative. And literally, like, sometimes I think that people just think that like creative is just funky. Anytime you make anything, anytime you have an aha moment about your personal life or your personal journey, anytime you make a human being, anytime you figure something out that's like a, you know, your own way of parenting or your own way of looking at your own health or body that is like working, like you are being creative and you're making, and it's wonderful.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And when are the moments that you feel most creative? I think you're right in that finding moments whenever you can without distraction. So when I'm breastfeeding my son, I turn everything off. I find, you know, it's just short moments throughout the day. And so in those moments, I want to be fully present with him.
Yeah, I did that with my daughter, because you also realize, like, especially once you stop breastfeeding, that it is such a tender and beautiful moment that like you really do want to be able to soak in. And so I remember I had so many friends who were like, oh, I miss breastfeeding so much, whenever they would be over. And I did the same thing. I just like, I was just not on my phone. And I just was like, I'm just going to like enjoy and like observe and be in my body and like be with my mm-hmm. child during this, the most intimate moments we'll ever have in our relationship.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I find he'll even get mad if I'm trying to be my phone or have a conversation.
And that doesn't stop. Even as they get older, they're like, my daughter like knows when you're not giving her undivided attention. And you're like, actually, every adult wants to be like this baby and be like, why are you like, I actually need you to like, listening to me requires that you like actually give me like full awareness. Like you're half listening if you're not. And is half listening at all? I don't know.
Right. No, that's such a good point. But I find that in these moments when I'm just quiet and like you said, being in my body and present in this moment, and yet he's not talking to me, so I'm just being there, I find that I have a lot of thoughts coming to me or things that I'd been thinking about earlier in the day or during other days have a moment to process, and I can have those aha moments or start connecting dots or problem solving just by being quiet, just by being in those kind of meditative moments.
Yeah. You know, I often talk to people about how if they're having trouble meditating, for me, I've always found that building to the thing you want is easier than just trying to be like, okay, I'm just going to do it. And like, this is what I'm going to do. And I was like, I feel like that always ends up someone does it for like 5 days and then they never do it again. And so I was like, just get there. So like if meditating for 20 minutes a day, just is like, you think you could do it with like, that's your greatest goal and you're just going to do it. And then you beat up on yourself when you miss one day. So then you don't do it. So you don't do it for like 2 more days and whatever. And like, start with like a 7-minute meditation and then do a 12-minute and then do a whatever. And then for people who really can't get into meditating, I'm like, well, where can you just slow down? Why don't you just start with like, where in your life can you slow down? Because if you can even just slow down, like just radically drop the pace of your life at a like certain time a day, even if it's just for 15 minutes, you have so much more access to hear yourself and know what's going on with you. And like, that's where all of your great ideas will bloom and blossom. That's where all of your aha moments will come to you. That's where you'll have clear. That's where clarity develops. And I was like, just like slow. If there's one thing I would ask anyone to do who's just like having a hard time and doesn't know where to start with self-care or yoga or meditation or anything like that, it's really just slow down. Like yoga is just slowing down. Any yogi will also tell you that yoga is just, that you could be on a walk and that could be yoga because it's also just how you move through the world.
Yeah, yoga chitta vritti nirodha. I may have just butchered that, but it's one of the yoga sutras, one of the first ones. And it's just yoga is the quieting of the mind chatter. And the physical part of yoga that people are used to in today's day is just one piece of overall yoga and what it is. And that practice helps us elevate our body, the frequency, up to the speed of the mind so that we can bring it all down for meditation and have that moment of quietness and connectedness. So yeah, I agree. Just slowing it all down. I want to talk a little bit about your poetry because it is so powerful, your writing. And I'm curious about why poetry? How did you discover that it was your medium, your form of creativity and what you create?
I feel that writing in general is probably one of the best forms of therapy anyone could have, and the freest, cheapest, easiest access. I think whether you consider yourself a writer or you don't, it's really important to write. And I think that anytime you are moving anything out of your body, so whether that you are doing that through exercise or you're doing it through writing something down or yelling into a pillow, it's really helpful. And what really distinguishes writing from that is that you can look at it after, you know, you can sit there and kind of be like, gosh, like, I really think that about this thing that's going on, or like, oh, wow, like here's where anxiety is showing up, or like, here's where like, I'm a little out of touch with reality because this person hasn't returned my phone call and I think that they hate me. And really like, you know, they're going through this thing with their family, and I can notice that like I jump to worst case, whenever I'm jumping to the worst case scenario about something, that's my anxiety coming in. And so we're able to have this ability to investigate our spiritual selves and our emotional selves when what is within us is on the paper. And so I think for me, I always enjoyed poetry the most because I wasn't a child who was, you know, very academic, and I didn't enjoy being in classrooms. And I loved poetry because it didn't really have rules. And I didn't really feel that there was a way that anyone could tell me that a poem was right or wrong. And because of that, I felt so free to express myself. And in that expression, I found so much personal healing that it had actually just helped me so much that I wondered if I could offer this to someone else, or maybe someone else was going through the same thing, or maybe I could write it in a way that held space for someone else to investigate what was going on in their lives. And so, you know, I just personally felt the benefits of having poetry in my life. And I really started by just sharing it with my girlfriends, and I would bring, you know, a pen and a pad to dinner, and we'd pass it around, and each one of us write a line of poetry and have wine and stay up late. And, you know, we were like in our early 20s in New York City. And so what started as something that was just a way of, you know, probably my own healing before being able to afford therapy or understanding anything, poetry had always been that for me. And so I started by sharing with my immediate community. And then I was like, you know, maybe like a stranger or someone I don't know yet is going through this too. And so then I remember in the very early days, I would write poems on the side of the walls in New York City. And then I started taking photos of my notebook and putting it on Instagram. And then I was like, you know, one day I was like, I really want to put a poem on a billboard. And we like found this way to do it. And so it really started as something that I just really wanted to share because it felt like such a gift to me.
And you have a poem written right behind you. What does that one say? World changing.
Oh, this says world changing love. Sounds fun.
That's so nice. It's so short, but so powerful. World changing love sounds fun. And now for a quick break. I wanted to take a few moments to tell you about our upcoming Empowered Motherhood Virtual Summit. It'll be co-hosted by Sakara and Dr. Aviva Ram, who you might know from previous podcast recordings. And Cleo Wade is also going to be a guest at the event, along with lots of other amazing mamas. It's a virtual 2-day event that'll dig into some of the complexities of motherhood with uncensored discussion. It'll provide resources for new mamas and not so new mamas alike, include Q&As with experts, and provide a lot of great community support. As a new mother myself, I found myself thinking, I wish I knew this before giving birth, or talking to my friends, so many people were saying, why is nobody talking about this? Well, we decided that we're going to be talking about it and decided to create this event to provide our community with access to information and candid conversations so that we can all feel a bit more empowered and supported in this wonderful journey known as motherhood. The 2-day event will be on April 9th and April 10th, and all proceeds will be going to Every Mother Counts. If you are interested in attending, follow the link in the episode show notes to RSVP. We hope to see you there. And now back to our chat with Cleo Wade.
I frequently have like little notes and messages around in my office. I always have like this note. One of my notes says, "Without community, there's no liberation," which is an Audre Lorde quote. I have a post-it over there that says, "Believe in yourself." I would never write or make anything that I didn't want or need, feel like I needed myself. And so, you know, even when I write books like Heart Talk or the Heart Talk Journal, every single one of those mantras and affirmations have at some point been on my own bathroom mirror or at my own desk. And, you know, I did my entire journal before I put it out into the world to make sure I knew that it was actually helpful. You know, I don't really, you know, it's so important to me that I can make things that are really beautiful and have this feeling of calm when you look at them, but they're really tools and they're really helpful. And you really feel like they kind of have this ability to like either radically change your day or at least just like slightly alter your thinking about something. I remember when Heart Talk was first coming out and one of my best girlfriends, she read an early copy of it and she owns this amazing company called Loleen. And I think at the time they were maybe like fundraising for it. I don't know, but she was taking like tons and tons of meetings where like usually as women we're really intimidated in them or second guessing ourselves in a lot because I think they were with like, you know, big boardrooms full of men or like, you know, people who've been in a certain business or field that you're in. I mean, I know, you know, that have been doing the thing you're trying to do differently, but have been doing it like the old way for a million years and kind of make you feel insecure when you walk in the room. And she was in some meeting and she had gotten an early copy of Heart Talk and she was probably one of the first people to read it. And so she said to me, she was like, I was in this meeting and she's like, you know, like I'm not all of a sudden going to have like a different personality because of Heart Talk and start like preaching love. But there was a moment where I said something and where I would have just been like spiraling after I said it to be like, you shouldn't have said that, or maybe you should have said it this way, or da da da. She was just like, no, the moment happened and like, I'm okay with what I said and is what it is. I remember thinking like, gosh, you know, that is one of my most proud moments as a writer, because to me, like gentle change that you understand and feel proud of and like these gentle habit changes are the things that end up like really becoming world-changing things in our lives. And so often we just don't realize that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Small changes add up over time. And especially when you start with the mind first, some people need to start with physical first. Like if you're changing your diet or your lifestyle, making habits like shooting for 6 cups of leafy greens throughout your day. But other people, it works better if you start from the mind first and understanding what those leafy greens are going to be doing for your gut health and your microbiome, or even just the self-love of I am worthy and I deserve health and I deserve to feel good in my body, deserve to have love in my life, things like that. I think one of the affirmations that you wrote that I like is self-love. It costs nothing and you gain everything. And self-love is something that I've just been thinking a lot about lately. In a way, it's a difficult concept to fully embrace, like self-love, because we can have so many negative thoughts coming through all the time. And how can we shift that if it's ego or whatever this kind of mind chatter again is coming in? How can we turn those away and just be comfortable and confident in ourselves as we are today? And so I like that of it costs us nothing, but it can be completely life-changing.
Yeah. It's important to always remember that you're, when we say self-love, it's a term for describing your relationship with yourself. And it's important to remember that you are in relationship with yourself. And so sometimes I'll like zoom it out to talk about like how comparing the relationship with ourselves and our relationships with other people, because we're really used to thinking about being in relationships with others. And so, you know, you can have someone that you love so much, and that doesn't mean that you like communicate well all the time, or that like they don't make mistakes, or they don't confuse you, or they don't, you know, like these things happen. And then we also have ways where we've been in relationships where the love wasn't present, right? So like something I often say is that if self-love says, I love you, self-care says, prove it. Self-care is how we prove how we love ourselves, because love is an action word. You know, love is a reflection of behavior in relationship. And so when there's not a lack of love because negative self-talk or chatter comes up, there's a lack of love if there's not a voice within you that says, I know where you came from. And like, I'm not buying it, because like, I know who sold it to me, and it's like not me, and this is not who I really am. And a desire to not seek the tools to combat the negative self-talk or the self-deprecatingness or the shaming of self or the lack of self-forgiveness, you know, the desire to not work with and move through and heal those things, that is when love is not present, because we're not caring and tending to those things. Having those feelings is just a part of the human condition, and it's a part of a human relationship with oneself. And so I always try to stress to people that it's like, listen, like, you do not love yourself because you have trouble forgiving yourself for your past. When love, self-love isn't present, it's because you aren't taking care, you aren't providing care for that struggle for self-forgiveness. You don't have a desire to work through it. And so, you know, whether it's not seeking help when you have access to help, not even talking to a friend or writing or doing whatever of the array of like kind of self-care things we can do to take care of our emotional lives, that is when self-love isn't showing up. So the cool thing about self-love is that we actually always have access to it. It is our birthright. It can come naturally to us, and it's a choice.
What are some of your favorite ways to practice self-love or some of these self-care practices?
One thing is really combating negative self-talk. So whether it's so many people struggle with confidence, and so you know, I often talk about how confidence isn't, you know, one big gesture. You know, it's a daily devotion. You know, we don't just say like, okay, like I've got the right haircut finally, so now I'm confident. Oh, I've met my goal weight, so now I can be confident. Like there's a lot that goes into confidence. And so whether that's saying like, confidence has to do with who I surround myself with, because if I'm around people who make me feel small and don't help me feel expansive, then my confidence won't be there. And who I surround myself with is a huge part of how I show love to myself through taking care of myself. When I have negative self-talk or imposter syndrome, or like, can you really do this? Or like, are you going to be so bad at this? You know, I work with different mantras that are like, you're nervous about this, but blah, 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 blah. And here's how you can get out of it. Or like, if I have anxiety, like I have mantras for that. And so I really do create mantras for others, because I really work with them as a part of how I give myself care and therefore have a loving relationship with myself.
How do you find the confidence to put yourself out there? Like, your words are very intimate. Are you ever concerned about what people are going to think about your words, especially in a time where there's lots of challenge on social media? How do you find that confidence to put yourself out into the world?
There's this page of my kid's book, and in it, the traveler says to the road, the whole book is kind of this conversation between a traveler and the road. And in it, the traveler says, you know, to the road, like, what if I get scared? And the road says, that's okay. You can still be brave. And the traveler says, but what does it mean to be brave? And then the road says, come with me. And then the road takes the traveler through this dark and scary forest. And the traveler acknowledges that even though they're scared, they trust the road. And when they get to the other side, the road says being brave is when you're afraid to do something, but you do it anyway. And when I wrote those pages, it was important. Every kind of spread of the book is a different theme in one way or another. One might be kind of about shame, and one might be about vulnerability. And this one's about fear and bravery. And so for this, what was really important to me was this understanding that being brave does mean being afraid and doing it anyway, but you can't get there without trusting yourself. And so I wanted to show that trust had to be a part of the equation, because without trust, you don't have a relationship with yourself and you don't even know why you want to be brave about some things. When we get to know ourselves and we develop a trusting relationship with ourselves, we can hear that, you know what, making it through this part of this dark and scary forest is something I do want to do. And so because it's something I do want to do, and I know that because I trust myself, you know, because the road and the traveler are kind of one. So it's because there's trust there, I know that it is my truth that this is what I want to do. And that is how I know that like the bravery is worth it and that I'm being brave about the right thing. And so I think that when it comes to putting things out into the world, it's putting a poem into the world or saying, having public commentary about something that could be controversial in the world is no different than like when you put a new product into the world, because you have this thing where you're like, gosh, I'm sure that like there's a million reasons why you could not. And there's a million reasons that someone else could tell you not to. But there's something where that you developed a relationship with yourself where you were like, I am going to do this regardless of these things and take this risk or do this brave thing and invest this into it and do it because I just trust whatever has gotten me this far.
Yeah, that intuition, that voice, that really resonates with me. In your book, one of the things that the road says is sometimes we go the wrong way on our way to the right way. Can you talk a little bit about what that means to you?
Yeah, that the theme of that spread is the traveler says, you know, the book starts out and the traveler goes, which way do I go? And the road says, that is your choice to make. And the traveler says, but what if I go the wrong way? And the road says, that is okay. Sometimes we go the wrong way on the way to the right way. And it was really important for me to have that messaging in there because it's kind of the like, it's the way to, I think, combat shame in children without saying the word shame or talking about it. Because that's like really all we can do to combat it. Because even to this day, like some people are just like, I think I know what shame is. Like I know what it feels like, but I don't totally know what the word means. And like, I'm not really sure like how you get over it. Is it like, okay, they say compassion has to do with it or like, and so I think it's a kind of, it's hard to like teach kids about shame. But I think that one of the easiest ways you can help kids with any type of shame is to show them that like there's ways you can like lighten up about the journey of your life and there's different types of perspective you can have and what makes something the wrong way if you ended up where you wanted to go eventually. And was there nothing you gained from that? And so to me, it was really important to have this spread that was like, sometimes you go the wrong way on the way to the right way. And it's really important to know that because so often when we end up going what feels like the wrong way, we get stuck there because we think that just going in the wrong direction means that we've reached the wrong destination. And if you're not where you want to be, then like you're not in the destination. You know, the destination is like where you feel you want to be. And so it just means that like you have to figure out what the pivot is, what it looks like. And I think that there were so many adults, myself included, who like had girlhood dreams where they thought they wanted this job or wanted to do this thing. And then it radically changed at a different point in their lives or always thought they'd be this type of mother and then they're this type of mother and then da-da-da. And, you know, we need to have grace for our journeys. And so often we don't give ourselves that. And so even as I wrote those pages, I thought so much about the parent who would be reading them. And I was like, you know, I hope I can offer you grace in this moment too, because sometimes we just feel like a bad mom or we like, you know, I have like things where I beat up on myself about parenting all the time. And you're just like, but listen, like this might be the only way I was going to learn this lesson in parenting. And like, I had to learn it this way.
No, this feels so much like a book that is great for adults, not just for children, to be honest. All of these are lessons that we can all be learning again and again and to be thinking about. And I know that you created the concept for this book before you even knew you were pregnant. How do you think motherhood has changed you and changed your writing and changed your thinking?
I started writing this book really for my childhood self. And it ended up being a really healing process for me in that way, because I was the girl who felt very alone at times and, you know, in need of that got this voice, this guidance that the road really provides in the book. And to just feel this kind of like warm blanket of like, okay, like things change and things get better. And that's what bravery is. Sometimes you're going the wrong way on the way to the right way. And you know, what if I fall? Something's there to catch you. Like, you know, there was so much. Their book is really reassuring in so many ways. And so it started on that journey. When I was about halfway through finishing it, I got pregnant. And then a few months later, I found out I was having a girl. And so it was really like, even to this day, I have a hard time talking about the book without being emotional, because it started out as something that was for like little girl me and ended up for my actual daughter. And so it's been really beautiful because
this is a podcast where we cry a lot, especially me. So feel free to cry. And that's just so beautiful.
Yeah. And so I started out, you know, really talking to myself as a child and saying, you know, this is going to be okay. And we make it through these things and you can still become a leader and it's different and all these things. And then by the end, I was, you know, dedicating this book to my daughter who I was cradling. You know, I finished the last, it wasn't the last page of the book, but the only page that I had one page that I'd been stuck with for a long time. And I realized later, I was like, I couldn't write that page because, you know, I needed my daughter to be born and I wrote it when she was 2 months old. And that was like, literally, I was holding up the whole process. It was just like, you have to finish this page, like, just get it done. Like, what's the problem? And I was just like, I don't know. I'm just like stuck on this one. I just can't get it right. And they're like, no one like understood the problem. And I was like, you know, I think that I wrote it a month after I had my daughter. And that was...
What was on the page? What is the message that you needed?
It was actually the first page of the book. And it was really interesting because I redrafted the first page of the book hundreds of times because it was really challenging to decide how someone decides why they want to go on a journey or take a magical road. And so it started in so many ways because there's so many reasons why you could want to, right? You're like, I had a bad day. So I had this, And then I realized that I was looking at my daughter one day and I was sitting with my partner and I was like, you know, so much of it is just that you're like wondering if there's something more out there, you know, cause I was like kind of in this moment of my life where I was sitting there with like more than I ever could have imagined, you know? And so I was like, gosh, I think as a child, the reason I was looking for a magical road was because like, I think there just has to be something different than this. There has to be something more than this. And the book starts with that, you know, like, have you ever wondered if there was something out there, something different, something more? And then it says, I did too. And then one day I found this road. And so I was in the middle of a moment where I was living beyond my wildest dreams. And it was only because I had that for one of the first times in my life that I was like, oh, that's where this journey begins.
And if you were to give a message to somebody who isn't sure if they're on their journey yet or is afraid to take a journey, that little girl who's reading this book, what would you say to her or to your 11-year-old self?
I think I would say like basically what's on, you know, the very next page of the book, the second the traveler gets on the traveler says, how do I start? And the road says, you have already started.
I love that. I think that that's a beautiful place for us to end. But before we do something that we call light work, which is where you give our listeners today an exercise or a practice or a challenge of some sort to put what we've talked about today into action in their own lives. So I'd love for you to share a light work with our Sakara Light listeners.
Sure. If I could give anyone an action, it would be to reach out to one person in your life who has maybe been on your mind, but been at the bottom of your list, and call them or reach out or check in on them, no matter what they're going through. You know, someone once told me that if you don't know what to say, saying the wrong thing is always better than saying nothing. And so, you know, if there was one thing is to just reach out to just even one person and just ask them how they're doing and tell them that you were thinking of them.
That's beautiful. And that one moment could make somebody feel less lonely.
Definitely. So,
amazing. Well, it's been wonderful speaking with you. And I'm so excited for the event that we have coming up together and all the amazing work that you're doing for Every Mother Counts. It's just such an important organization. So thank you for that work. And looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. I so appreciate the time.
And now I wanted to share a Sakara story from one of our East Coast clients, Maggie, about our signature nutrition program. Maggie says, "I feel great and proud of myself knowing that I am making my body happy, which helps me feel happy. I've struggled with migraines my entire life and was getting about 4 a week before starting this program. Now I'm down to maybe 1 a week, sometimes none at all. I've also been struggling a lot recently with depression, and overall, I've just felt like crap about every single aspect of my life and myself. I've noticed a big change with this program. I'm happier, waking up earlier, I feel more excited and ready for the day, and I feel a hell of a lot better about myself on a personal level." This is such an incredible story. Maggie, thank you for sharing this with us and getting a little vulnerable to talk about just how you feel about yourself. Self-love is something that every person on this planet has a right to, as Cleo has said, and I find also struggles with on a regular basis. It is completely human, completely natural to have these struggles with yourself. It is a relationship and one that needs nurturing and needs time and attention, just like any other relationship in our lives. Food and nutrition is a form of that self-love. When we decide that we are worthy and deserving of taking care of ourselves and taking care of our bodies and giving it what it needs, it can trickle out into other parts of our lives. And when we're feeling really good in our bodies, when we have that energy, we can show up as more of our true self in other areas of life. It can serve as one of the inputs to building confidence. So we're so happy that we can be there for you and be that extra little layer of self-love on your journey out in the world. If you haven't tried our Sakara Signature Nutrition Program yet and you're thinking about it and you find yourself struggling with this concept of self-love and self-care, I encourage you to just try it. This is an invitation to come and start to feel better, to learn and explore and see what filling your body with really great nutrition can do for every aspect of your life. Come over to sakara.com. If you have questions, reach out. Our team is amazing and everyone is here to support you and happy to answer any questions you might have. If you have a Sakara story that you would like to share with us, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email at sakarastories@sakaralife.com. That's SAKARASTORIES @sakaralife.com, or send us a DM at Sakara Life. Don't forget to hit subscribe for the Sakara Life podcast and share this episode with anyone you think needs to hear what we talked about today.
And don't forget about the light work. It might feel a little hard, a little uncomfortable, but it's supposed to. The whole idea is that we lean into what's uncomfortable so we all get to shine our lights a little brighter. And we'll see you on the other side, Sakara Lights.